And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to an emergency Low Post podcast. Kawhi Leonard has been traded to the Toronto Raptors in exchange for DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a top 20 protected 2019 first round pick to help us dissect it all. The great Kevin Arnovitz, how you doing, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. This is just all I wanted for this trade was no World Cup final interruption, check. And I have a wedding this weekend in the Bay that I really did not want this hovering over because it's a weekend getaway, and check on that. So this is a home run, just perfect timing for the Low household. This is all I care about. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the Raptors and the Spurs. I just care about me.
Nestled on a Wednesday afternoon between World Cup / Summer League hangover and true vacation.
Summer League really got me this year. I wasn't even out late. I'm getting old. I'm getting old. Anyway, give me your. You wake up to this on the West Coast.
I'm in Atlanta.
That's right.
I was sort of over coffee.
And what's the initial reaction?
I mean, so when you trade your best player, ostensibly the objective is you service the future, right? You can't get four quarters on a dollar, so you kind of. Maybe you rebuild on the fly, you rebuild not on the fly, but in some sense you're rebuilding because you can't immediately replace the value. And so, all right, the way I look at it is there are three things you want, right? You want prospects, you want meaningful draft picks, and yes, every draft pick is meaningful, but they vary in weight. And you want the elimination of long-term salary. And so what's confounding to me is if you're the San Antonio Spurs, you don't really get a lot of any of the three. You get zero of the elimination of long-term salary. You get if you're lucky, you'll pick 21 to 30, and it seems that a good chance you will. And, I think you and I like Poeltl. He's a nice young player. But if you had told me a week and a half ago that Toronto was the team, what do you think the construction of the deal was? At least for the Spurs, hoping it's OG Anunoby is one of my problems. I'm hoping it's two out of the three Anunoby, Siakam, Poeltl. Maybe DeLon Wright, who knows? But in addition to DeRozan, or barring that, some really good, picks, maybe a third team, who knows? Which kind of leads me to my second question, which is, given that this is clearly a, let's stay competitive, let's stay relevant. Actually, let us not forget we're a 47-win team without Kawhi Leonard. Now we're adding, an all-NBA player, which theoretically should elevate us far, beyond 47 games. Yes, we're losing Danny Green, who's a very good two-way guard, if not as good as he used to be. And so the question I have is, how much of this trade is influenced by the fact that Greg Popovich, who has earned as much as any one man can earn in terms of equity and capital from an organization, the fact that he is in his final few years of coaching by every signal he's giving, and he's a man in his late 60s now, because this is a trade not really at all in no form or fashion about the long-term future. It's about the near-term maintaining relevance, and by the way, that is another goal of the trade in addition to those other things. I mean, that is a legitimate goal. And the other goal, and I'll toss it to you.
You got a lot of goals. A lot of goals
there. Yeah.
Goals as France scored in the World Cup final, although two of them were bogus.
A lot of goals.
Two of them were bogus, by the way. Bogus. I don't know the rules of soccer, but I am comfortable declaring them bogus. Please continue.
Have you had a podcast since Croatia?
Since they lost?
Since the loss?
Yes, I did. I did.
So you had ample time to vent. Yeah. But the other question is did they get the best deal? And there's every indication. I was kind of going over the deals I know, fairly confidently were in place. Not in place. We're on the table, rather, not in place. And this might have been the best deal, depending on how you value DeMar DeRozan. And I don't know if there's a guy of his quality in the league who has greater variance of value when you ask 10 intelligent people.
Yeah, there were two things hovering over this deal that sort of determine the parameters, right? One is that the Spurs just don't have a lot of leverage, and they did once the Lakers decided and / LeBron decided, we're cool without getting Bron or without getting a superstar partner for Bron right away. And given Kawhi's mysterious health issues, which, you know, I mean, we'll see when he takes the physical with the Raptors and all that, and his free agency and the reported intentions to go to Los Angeles. There just wasn't going to be a big market for him. And then above all of that, the Spurs just weren't interested in prospects and draft picks. They just were not. They wanted a player who would help them win right now. And the only player in the league who I think they talked about, which fits the age timetable of a prospect and is so good he would help them win now, was, you know, they at the very least implied to the Sixers, if you want to get this done, one of your two big boys has got to be in this deal, and probably Simmons, because we have a couple of big men we like. And that was obviously not going to happen. And given those realities, I just don't know where the rest of the deal is going to come from. And I agree with you. I mean, I think this will be one of those trades that it's going to be interesting to see sort of the fault lines of evaluation of it, because a lot of it will depend on how good do you think DeMar DeRozan is. And that's one of the he is one of the players where there's still sort of the new school, old school fault line still kind of exists. And I think DeMar is a really good player, a legitimate all-star. All of that, if I'm the Spurs in an ideal world without the win now priorities and Popovich's timetable and all that, I'm taking Sixers, Celtics, Heat, whoever I can think of that has picks for me or is willing to give picks and young players to me, and bidding them off against each other. I'd rather have four draft picks than what they got. If at least one or two of them are good, I'd rather have four draft picks than what they got. But there are going to be people who say, wait a second. DeMar DeRozan made second team All-NBA. Now, I didn't put DeMar DeRozan on any All-NBA team, so I'm the wrong audience for that argument, with apologies to DeMar, who's a wonderful, wonderful player and a wonderful guy. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this unfolds.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the Spurs now have two of those really, in some ways, the all backcourt and all frontcourt players in the polarizing new versus old debate. And if you had told me 5 years ago, hey, these are the San Antonio Spurs basketball values and core values, and, oh, by the way, they're featuring DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, I would have been, get out of here. Because they, you know, again, and I think they're both wonderful players and have great attributes. And I'm trying to remember if I put DeMar on the third team. And I'm like filling up my ballot and I can't remember and I can't find it.
Sadly, I just declared that I didn't, and I'm only like 80% sure that's true.
That stuff gets, it's kind of like a chemistry test in high school. I forget everything literally the minute I walk out the door with the ballot. It's hard. All NBA, I had them. No, I didn't. I don't think I did. I have Simmons and DeRozan as my. Yeah, actually, I think I did have DeRozan as my 15th player. Neither of them personify what we thought were sort of San Antonio's core basketball values in 2013 or 2014. They're both mid-range artists. Neither moves the ball particularly well relative to their overall skill set. They're both essentially isolation players. Aldridge is a wonderful big man pick and roll defender. DeRozan has, we'll call them defensive limitations, vulnerabilities, whatever they might be. But there's a lot of production there, but when you start sort of grading out for efficiency, not as impressive. And now this is kind of what they're going to war with, along with Rudy Gay, who historically is kind of the ultimate, you know, forward on that team. And the all, hey, what do you really think, school of old school, new school evaluation. He was sort of the forward on that team. So it's just interesting to watch the evolution of a franchise. And I think they're going to be pretty good next year. Pretty good next year.
They were ahead of the curve on corner threes, and they were the beautiful game in 2013 and 14 and all of this. It turns out their overriding value is just maximization of talent. What talent is on hand for us? What superstar or star level talent exists? What are they good at? How can we best mold that to what we need to do? And in this case, it's the two premier mid-range jump shooters in the league at wing and big, and Rudy Gay. You mentioned, I forgot about Rudy Gay, another brief Raptor tenure. The Spurs, I'm looking at cleaning the glass, Ben Falk's site. They were, in frequency of mid-range shots, they were 42.6% of their shots were either floaters or long twos, so all mid-range. That was fourth in the league. The Kings were first. Shockingly, the Kings not exactly trend-setting in anything, especially math. Then Wolves, then Knicks. Again, just like you could just pick these blindfolded. I bet the Spurs will lead the league next year.
Yeah, and again, if you're the San Antonio Spurs and you generally say in this situation, okay, but what we'll do is we'll increase the quality of the player's shot when he comes over. And I think, you know, for Aldridge, I think when his last year in Portland in terms of shot quality, and again, we've talked about the second spectrum metric or any other metric, I think he was like in the, you know, toward the very, very bottom of the league. And I think when he came over, he improved, you know, certainly below average, but not, you know, and that is their virtue as a system is, yeah, as you say, it's not about the corner threes and this that, and the other. It's really about when you come over, you will take you'll have a healthier diet of shots. That is what we serve here. But it is interesting because in some ways you almost hear the Spurs saying, yeah, you know, draft picks are nice in the future. We'll bank on our player evaluations. We will go find those guys. If it is middle of the first round, so be it. We'll find the middle of the first round. We will exercise some brand of creativity. And so long as the Spurs special sauce maintains itself, then that's probably true. You know, the question is, and I say this as a kind of fan of longtime, I don't say fan, but appreciator of all things Spurs. You know, I mean, the question is, an interesting parlay game is, all right, in 10 years, are we talking about the San Antonio Spurs as the, quote, gold standard of the league? Or is there a day coming when Tim Duncan is now 10 years removed from the Spurs, Pop is retired on his vineyard, maybe RC's there, maybe he's not, and, you know, Kawhi wasn't the new standard bearer, that we talk about the Spurs as a, you know, slightly above average NBA organization doing decently in their market. I'm just really curious to see, as we all grow older, you know, can a franchise maintain that station over time? Because it's been a rough couple of seasons, right? I mean, their best players hasn't been Tim Duncan in terms of just, you know, general calmness and everything else. And so it is interesting. Will there be a day where we don't talk about the Spurs in the way we talk about the Spurs? And some cynics might say, well, why are you still talking about them the way you're talking about them?
Well, I mean, right? I'm glad you brought up Tim Duncan, because the Spurs are alternatively humble, and sometimes they can exude a touch of, I don't know what the right word is, a little bit of holier than thou, that, you know, about tanking and competing to win and all that. The bottom line is, like, this is all the last 20 years all starts with intentional or unintentional or whatever, tanking to get Tim Duncan. That's the whole thing. Now, they've done a lot of really smart things since then. Tony Parker late in the first round, Manu Ginobili, what, the greatest second round pick maybe in the history of the league. But it's all, and trading for Kawhi, the home run trade for Kawhi. It all stems.
And finding guys off the scrap heap just time and time again.
Danny Green. Yeah. Danny, remember there was like a brief moment in the 2013 finals where like Danny Green was going to win finals MVP if they won because he made a million threes.
Yeah, it's second only by like Gary Neal.
Oh man, I miss Gary Neal. I wonder where he is these days. I hope he's lighting up China or something. But it all stems from Duncan, and you know, it turns out nobody is Tim Duncan. LaMarcus Aldridge is not, and Kawhi Leonard is not, and we still. The amazing thing is, I just don't still really understand what happened. And I don't even think some people with the Spurs understand how it got this bad. I mean, we all understand the nuts and bolts of like, oh, they diagnosed his injury this way versus that way. And then he wanted different doctors. And then Pop started saying his group, and Tony Parker said what he said, which was kind of taken out of context, maybe a little bit. Like, I understand the dots. They just don't add up to me to like, I am literally willing to maybe sit out the season to avoid looking you people in the face again. It just doesn't. I don't understand.
You're saying nothing of the $80 million, right?
And the Supermax, the 5 years, $219 million that's gone
now
up in smoke now.
We won't know. I mean, was he ever truly offered it, or was there an understanding? I mean, that's a question I don't know the answer to.
I would assume he was not truly offered it. I mean, offered it, yeah, in terms of here it is, sign it. Because if you're offered it, you sign it and figure it out later.
No, you're right. It's funny. I've taken an interest the last few years in organizational cultures. It's just something I like studying. Organisms are interesting, yada, yada, yada. And I feel like we are sort of, sports has gone through this sort of business management organizational culture era. And everyone's trying to remember Spurs East, Spurs Mountain West, Spurs this, Spurs that. And when you start really breaking it down, And it is, I don't mean this as any disrespect to management in San Antonio. What I'm starting to learn, and I don't even think I knew this as acutely two and a half years ago, but it was really about Duncan. Like, at the end of the day, yes, there are organizational principles, and certainly certain front offices are managed better and more thoughtfully than others. But at the end of the day, your team's culture is going to be set by your team leader, your best player. And you can try to integrate systems from this other team that you used to be the assistant GM at, or bring over a member of their tree, you know, to be your GM or your, even your coach. But at the end of the day, it is really about, I'd say, you know, a large percentage, a plurality, if not a majority, about your best player.
What do you think of the Lakers sitting another one out?
Well, it's interesting. In some ways, it's really good for them because it's Toronto. Because, you know, I think everyone has, if you're the Lakers and you're kind of counting on Kawhi in 2019, and we're not going to let what happened with Paul George affect this one. We're not going to, you know, back up the truck for a guy we're pretty certain we have a good probability of getting. You're concerned if you think, and I don't mean this is any slight on Toronto, but if Danny Ainge is the guy making the sale for the next 8, 9, 10 months, you got to be a little worried.
Well,
that's a good sale.
Masai can sell. I mean, Masai is you're not implying, but this is like, I'd be at least a little, like, there's not, people are texting me from all over the league, including people who are kind of like 2 steps away from the Raptors or 2 steps away from Kawhi. 0% chance he's staying. 0, 0, 0. I'm like, there's a 1% chance of anything almost. And there
absolutely. I'm not saying it's definite. No. I think it's like, listen, Toronto, I mean, you know, Masai is going to, you know, sell his ass off. And it's a, as you pointed out many times, it's a great place to play. The taxes aren't probably great. I've never made that kind of money, but you know that is, there's a certain extra cost there. But in terms of amenities and everything, I mean, I think Toronto's, I've said it before, it's more than a sleeping giant. It is actually a giant in terms of media, in terms of quality of market.
It's a top six NBA city. NBA city.
Oh, without question. I fell in love this spring, even as sleet was hitting me in the face in late April, 30 miles per hour. I still loved it. But I think it is hard. It is a little harder to sell Toronto than the Celtics. I like this deal for Toronto a lot.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, to me, the essence of this deal for Toronto is that at some point, we are going to have to transition our franchise. Okay, Kyle Lowry has been our best player for 5, 6 years now. He's, 32? Something like that. His deal has 2 more years left on it. Yes, 2 more seasons at $31 and $33 million. And DeMar DeRozan, as good as he is, just isn't good enough to look at him and say, that guy is so good that we don't have to rebuild. He's so good that we can put him as the undisputed number one guy on the team, remain super duper competitive, and figure out the rest out. Whether the rest is our young guys get better or we pluck a free agent. And by the way, the Raptors never get free agents. So, you know, another reason this is a big swing for them, or make another trade or whatever. Kawhi Leonard is good enough that you can look at him and say that this guy, if he's healthy, is a top five NBA player. As Kyle ages out, we can hand the baton to him, hover around 50 wins, and figure it out. And that to me is like, if the price is that drop off from Kawhi to DeMar, plus the risk that Kawhi just walks away, and Jakob Poeltl, who we both very much like, is a nice player, might be a great third big or a fifth starter, whatever, and a top 20 protected pick that literally just exists for 1 year and then becomes 2 seconds. To me, this is, it's not an easy deal because DeMar is really good and there's a certain amount of sentimentality attached to DeMar and the team. The easiest thing to do is just run this team back. That's what they did last summer. They ran it back, re-signed everybody.
Yeah.
To me, this is an easy trade for Toronto to make.
Yeah, and they're really good. Yeah, I'm just thinking about their perimeter depth all of a sudden.
Oh, my God.
The Kawhi health is a huge variable here, right? I mean, and I think everything we're saying has that disclaimer. The Kawhi is healthy and is the Kawhi Leonard we know. But their depth on the perimeter is – I mean, is really insane. And also, it's pretty damn good defensively now.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, you know, I think Anunoby's extremely gifted defensively. Obviously, Kawhi's Kawhi. I mean, Danny Green, you know, might not be the same body he was a few years ago, but the best perimeter transition defender in basketball. And still, you know, a guy you can pick up, you know, the other guy that Kawhi's not guarding. You know, obviously they bring Fred VanVleet back.
DeLon Wright can guard multiple.
DeLon Wright
was their go-to defender against Ben Simmons. Yep. Like, DeLon Wright can guard across a lot of positions. I'd like to see, like, Siakam can guard every position. I'd like to see him play a little small ball five against, you know, you come up against the Warriors or Al Horford at five. Like, maybe you try that. Although Al Horford destroyed even Giannis last year, so who knows.
You know, I covered that series against Washington, and watching Siakam guard Wall were, like, my favorite 25 possessions of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, you know, and by the way, I'm still of the opinion that Norman Powell can play NBA basketball. So, you know, there's that too. Clearly they were, because, you know, he's got the longest term deal on their books. So I'm just, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, are they the best team in the East? And again, if you're someone who's like, look, they were the best team in the regular season East last year, and now they just basically upgraded if Kawhi is healthy. Well, by definition, unless you feel like the jump in Boston is just going to be enormous, and I think it might very well be. I mean, I think there's a good case this is the best team in the East next year.
Yeah, I think they're neck and neck. They're clearly better than the Sixers. Look, I've got to sit down and recalibrate everything now that this is the musical chairs game is ending soon. But I put them 1-2. I'd probably give the slight edge to Boston. I think Boston has the potential to be special next season, like 62, 63 wins kind of special. So I would give them the slight edge. But everything you just said about the Raptors is I co-sign completely. Let's talk about the Spurs for a few more minutes before we bring on Bruce Arthur from Toronto. I mean, you look at the West next season. Everyone was sitting there hoping the Spurs made a Kawhi trade that put them out of the playoffs, even though people understood that that was probably not going to happen. So you've got, I mean, leave aside the Mavs, who I think are a little overrated. You have the Clippers are clearly trying to win, at least for now, signed a million quality player. Like, they got a million good players. Denver, having run it back and re-signed Barton and done a couple other things.
And we'll have a healthy Millsap, presumably.
And the Grizzlies, you know, as you know, in Vegas, they're just, you sort of, the same parlor game questions come up over and over again as you run into people. And it's always like, who are your eight Western Conference playoff teams? Nobody, zero people brought up the Grizzlies. And I'm telling you, we are sleeping on the Grizzlies if the two stars are healthy, because Slo-Mo will help them a little bit. Garrett Temple will help them a lot. A year of experience for their young guys. The Jackson kid is interesting.
I love that you were like you're 78 years old. The Jackson kid.
That kid.
You're like chomping on a cigar there, Zach. Like,
and so we just named, and LeBron signed with the Lakers. So there's four teams that are out of the playoffs that are legitimately, I think, threats to get in, not including Dallas, who I don't see as a threat, but others might. I mean, who is a lock to make the playoffs in the Western Conference besides Houston and Golden State? Like, is there another lock anywhere?
Houston, I don't think there's one other lock. Golden State, Houston, there's not one other lock.
I mean, I think your best arguments are Oklahoma City and Utah. And I think Utah is one of the more fascinating teams in the league. I always love Utah. I mean, it's like a joke now.
Yeah.
But, like, they're this team. They're sort of like a better version of – and I hate this comparison because I thought it was a little facile during the season. But, like, now – they remind me a little bit of the Heat that went 30-11 to finish the season. Is like, now you run it back for a full season. Were you really that good? And I think the answer is probably someplace close to yes, but I still kind of want to see it. And the Thunder, Russ and PG, it's just hard to bet against them. And I'll tell you this, like, people are going to talk about the Lakers like a borderline playoff team, and I get it on paper. There are X wins and all that. I will never pick LeBron to miss the playoffs, ever. I am picking the Lakers to make the playoffs. I do not care what else happens in the Western Conference from here on out.
I agree. By the way, I just saw Danny Green's Instagram post, which is really lovely.
Really?
Just lovely. Like, if San Antonio can't express the love I have for you, it's thanks to Pop and RC, the teammates. You know, it was the first franchise that really believed in him. Looking forward to his next chapter in Toronto. It's just really. I like when guys self-author that stuff.
He's one of the best. Yeah, he's great to talk to all the time. Danny is just a great guy to talk to. And it's funny because there are people in the league, including a GM I was talking to this morning just about this trade, who just don't think Danny Green is good. We were friendly debating it. And the argument was, you know, there are some games where he scores like 4 points and he can't dribble and one rebound and you're like, wonder what the hell he was doing. And I get that. He's not the same. He's had some injuries. He's lost a little bit of athleticism that, you know, he doesn't have a lot to lose. I just think Danny Green is good. Like when Danny Green's on the court, I feel pretty good about life if he's like the fourth or fifth best guy on the floor for me. But there are just a lot of people who don't think he's good. And he, from the Spurs perspective, we just want to get rid of his salary. I think that was the only motivation. It was like, here's $10 million. We don't want it. We're taking in 27. Here's 10.
Yeah, I mean, get all as much money as you can on that deal. But it was interesting. I would have, you know, what, you know, could you have talked them into, I don't know, Gasol or one of the longer term deals?
I thought Powell was going to be in the deal.
Right.
And let's put it this way. I believe it was Thursday in Vegas. There was a sense that this could have happened that night. It felt imminent, and Powell's name was rumored, and I'll just leave it there. Powell's name. I thought they would try to get Powell in the deal, and I wonder if what's happened between that day and today is just sort of continued haggling over the little details, because the offers that were being bandied about over those 48 hours in Vegas were like everything from DeRozan and Poeltl and nothing, no pick, to DeRozan, Wright, and two picks. So I just didn't know what was happening, and they clearly landed somewhere in the middle. But no Anunoby and no Siakam is pretty damn good for the Raptors.
Yeah, that was the thing. Those are the two guys I want to keep. And, DeRozan's salary becomes, I think next summer will look, again, if you are a DeMar DeRozan person and believe he's an all-NBA player, you know, 27-7 in 1920 is not a bad salary to have. I mean, look, presumably you could move him again if you wanted to. It's just a confound. I mean, the takeaway to me is, wow, this is a team playing for the present. And, you know, and it's you can make a very good argument that Greg Popovich has earned that to retire in his final years. You know, with a competitive team,
absolutely,
you can maximize and do what you've been doing for 20 some odd years. And I don't blame them.
I ain't betting against them winning 50 games next year, as much as I don't love this trade for them. And they need to figure out who's starting at the three and some shooting issues and yada, yada, yada. Like I don't bet against them making the playoffs. I may not pick them, but they're going to be a good team. My only hesitancy is they live on the dumb teams. Like, if you're just a dumb, young, bad team, the Spurs can just stroll on the court and just pass you and execute you to death 40 times a year. The way the West is now, they don't got 40 of those games. You know what I mean? Like, they just don't have a lot of those games where they're going to feast on these stupid, unprepared teams who don't know how to execute NBA basketball. That's the one thing that worries me a little bit.
Right. Is there a Western Conference team, going back to your last exercise, that's actively worse? Other than, I'm trying to think. But you can make the argument, oh, they're decidedly worse this year. And the answer is no. Not one team.
Have the Kings gotten worse?
I mean, if you believe Fox is going to be 1 year better.
That's true. All their young guys. All their young guys will incrementally improve.
I don't think they might not be much better, but I don't think they're worse by virtue of their youth. I don't know. Unless you believe, hey, Zach won him a bunch of games. I'm trying to construct an argument. The point is you're right. There's just not a lot of Western Conference Wednesday nights where the Spurs are just going to school a team.
Yeah. You know, like the Magic and the Hawks come to town and the Bulls come to town. That's cool. But, like, there aren't a lot of those games. All those teams play in the East. You got to play these other teams four times. I mean, you look at the West, it's like, boy, oh, boy. I mean, we don't got a lot of time to talk about it because Bruce is coming on, but you're talking about.
We will have before you know it, Zach, we will be on the phone talking about our five most confusing, confounding teams. It is a rite of fall.
And you talk, Minnesota, that's a volatile team. Are they a lock? No. New Orleans, that's a volatile team. Are they a lock? No. Portland, the third seed last year, I mean, I bet most
I will say this, though. AD is my preseason MVP pick. I'm just going to throw that out there.
It's a pretty good pick.
I think he's going to
What is it officially? It's not preseason yet. We're in the interregnum now. It can't be preseason until mid-August. Yeah, any other final thoughts on this? Other than the Spurs are certainly just relieved it's over, I think.
Yeah, as we all are. You hit it. I mean, I'm not going to bet against the Spurs. They typically make players better. And it's just going to be really interesting to watch. Sort of a Spurs that is really the last vestiges of Spursness, as we always talk about it, are really gone from a basketball standpoint. It'll just be, that's interesting to me.
I may not talk to you until September, my friend.
Enjoy your vacation.
Yeah. Thanks for all the time and all the low posts and all the fun chats and all of that. And enjoy your vacation as well. And we will talk soon. Kevin Arnovitz, everybody. Welcome back to the Low Post Podcast. We are thrilled to have Toronto star ace columnist, multi-sport expert, and expert tobogganer as well, Canadian Bruce Arthur. How you doing?
Zach, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Nothing much going on.
You were cottaging. This pulled you away from cottaging, which I hate to hear.
Yeah, I did wake up intending to take the kids maybe to the beach or have them swim in the pool, maybe go to a local provincial park. And, yeah, this changed it a little bit. I kind of had an idea that this has been in the works. It's been kind of the conversations have gone on and off. The Raptors have been very cagey about it and tried to keep it as under wraps as they could. But this is the biggest, and we've said this before about the Raptors, this is the biggest moment in franchise history until the next one, which is when Kawhi Leonard either reports or doesn't to be a Toronto Raptor. But it's honestly, it's everything the Raptors have ever tried to do, and it's still so much more complicated than maybe you'd think.
For sheer drama, imagine if he didn't report, which, by the way, is not crazy.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's on the table. Everything that I've been told is that he just has no interest in Toronto. It's not where he wants to be. There's a short list of cities that he has, and Toronto was not anywhere near it. The thing is, the Raptors, as far as I can tell, knew that. They absolutely knew that Kawhi did not want to come. And Masai Ujiri made the deal anyway, which is fascinating because if you look at the history of Masai Ujiri in Toronto, ever since he came here, he's been trying to get the Raptors to be noticed, to matter. So F Brooklyn in the square, that was a way of, pay attention to me, pay attention to us. We're in the playoffs, we're here. Everything Masai's done, from getting a practice facility to a G League team to building bigger and bigger, at least a regular season quality team, everything has been about making Toronto a cultural, civic, and athletically palatable place to play for a superstar player. And the problem is superstars just never became available or they didn't want to come. And he basically, this is like him taking one by force, right? Like it's him saying, I am willing to bet on my ability to convince you that this is worth your time. And it's a huge challenge and a huge mountain to climb, it sounds like. But I don't know, in this league where true superstars are the rarest thing in the world, then it's if you're the Raptors, I think it's absolutely worth trying.
I want to be clear. I haven't talked to Masai about this trade today or in the last few days. I'm willing to bet he actually doesn't even care if he loses that if he loses that wager. If he can't convince Kawhi that this is a place that maybe he'd want to at least consider signing on to long term, wonderful city, crazy fans, possibly the favorites in the East, although I would still pick Boston. I think to him it's still worth the dice roll because it's step one in, if not this, then let's start tearing the thing down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you don't even have to tear it all the way down, right? Like, what you've lost here is you've lost an all-star player in DeMar DeRozan, but one who was clearly flawed. They were still hiding him on defense in the playoffs. Those same sore spots still exist despite his really laudable improvement. Like, and you lost Jakob Poeltl, who by my estimate is their fifth best young player, who was the fifth best young player of that bench mob plus OG Anunoby. They kept Pascal Siakam. They kept OG. They kept DeLon Wright. They kept Fred VanVleet. And they lose a first-round pick, which is going to be a very, very late first-round pick, which is the kind of first-round pick that is built to put into a deal like this. So if you have to restart this in a year where Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard come off your books, you still got all those young players. You still got talent in your roster, and you can start rebuilding something else. So it's not like they'll be destitute. But what they gave up, like the DeMar DeRozan thing in Toronto is so interesting because this city loved him just
as
really,
they should. As
like,
they should.
Like no one else.
Yeah, as they should. He stayed. He was the one who tweeted in like 2010 when Twitter was like not even very old. We're going to fix this or whatever his version of the Steph Curry tweet is. And, you know, he's got the Blue Jays hat on and like he really, for a city that was sort of considered like an NBA backwater, even though it is a top three cosmopolitan city in the NBA and a top five market, whatever, he put his flag down. And it would have been very easy for him to not do that and go somewhere else, and including where he's from in L.A., and he never did that. He was proud to play for the Toronto Raptors. And I don't know how many star players have been that proud to play for the Toronto Raptors for a prolonged period of time ever.
First guy ever. He really is. Like as much, Toronto, you're right. It's a great city. It's a diverse city. Like if you want restaurants, if you want culture, if you want big city excitement, it's all here. It all exists. NBA players all know. Like the funny thing is Greg Popovich knows it about as well as anybody because it's one of his favorite restaurant cities. But DeMar loved it here and repped the city in a way no basketball player of his stature ever has. And so it's emotionally complicated to deal him because he's the guy who stayed and he's the one you send away. He's the one you decide he goes somewhere else. And the first thing that Raptors fans hear is Kawhi Leonard doesn't want to come. And it brings back all those ghosts again, right? Like the Chris Bosh, Vince Carter, Damon Stoudemire, Antonio Davis, Alonzo Mourning, everything that's happened in the history of the franchise of guys not wanting to be here. And so Masai set himself up with this amazing, amazing task here in that one, he may, even though LeBron James has left the conference, Masai may be setting himself up for another confrontation with LeBron in free agency if the Lakers do try to get Kawhi in free agency in a year and it's the Raptors versus LeBron. LeBron could tear the heart out of the Raptors once again. And the other one is this. He is betting not only against L.A., but everybody that he can convince someone to believe what DeMar DeRozan believes and what he believes about Toronto as a city and an organization. And it all it does is it sets the bar higher than it's ever been set in Toronto for either success and someone staying or someone leaving again from the Toronto Raptors. It's incredible how this, it's like history repeating. It's like the entire history of the organization has been distilled into a one-year task. And we don't even know if this guy's going to show up.
Can I tell you, can I confess something to you?
You can.
I love it when you say organization. I say that in my private life when I'm talking about sports teams. I like to say that they're a great or a bad organization. It's the best Canadianism that there is.
I wasn't aware it was a Canadianism.
I think it's a Canadian thing. I think the South Park Canadians say it, organization. I don't know. Hockey teams are always referred to as organizations. When I'm in Toronto and watching hockey coverage, which is always, because if you go out to a bar in Toronto, it doesn't matter if the Raptors are playing or the Maple Leafs are playing. There will be like a Senators Jets game on or something because it's hockey. Has Canada ever made a soccer World Cup, by the way?
I think we made it once. I believe it was 1986. I don't believe we scored a goal. And I think that might be it. Congratulations on Croatia's run, by the way. It was inspiring for a small, scrappy country. I was very proud of them and of you.
We were very proud as well. But by the way, aren't we all co-hosting it in like 2026 after Qatar?
Isn't we have it? Like 10 games. It's not really going to matter here. None
but
of
you don't automatically
matter,
get in, do you? How are they sorting that out? Doesn't the host automatically get in?
I think because it's a multiple country bid, that may still be up for discussion. I'd have to check that.
It's a very important issue. so on Kawhi, Look, I'm not going to bet against Masai. He's persuasive. He's charismatic. And I think you have to sit down with Kawhi and say, hey, look, man, like, you're a basketball player. We have a team with an all-star. And the Nick Nurse dynamic we'll get into, that's a very interesting dynamic because I'm not sure that anyone signed up for this. We got an all-star. We got a lot of young players. We won 59 games last year. We can make the finals. And if we make the finals, you just, who knows, right? I mean, we'll probably lose because everyone loses to the Warriors, but just, you know, give it a shot. You're a pro. Let's see how good you are. Let's see, because he has a way of confronting players and inspiring at the same time. Let's see how good you are. And like, this is to me, everyone in now in NBA Twitter is very pro labor, as am I, and we should be. And I'm very pro player empowerment. And like, I have no problem with Kyrie forcing his way out of Cleveland and all that, but like, you gotta play. You signed a contract. You gotta play. Like, that's part of the deal. Like, if you're healthy, you gotta play. And I don't want to hear this, like, don't report this, that, and the other thing. Like, I'm sorry that these are the rules, but you're getting paid $20.1 million. You play for the Raptors. Like, you gotta play. Like, at some point, it's like if I just told ESPN or you just told the Toronto Star, hey, you know what? I'm just gonna sleep for like a year. I don't really like the way this business is going. Like, they would say, okay, well, sorry, you're either fired or you don't get any money anymore.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I believe players earn everything they make and get. And Jalen Rose once said, "It ain't what you earn; it's what you negotiate." But if you remember how Vince Carter forced his way out of Toronto, if he played, but he didn't really play. He watched other guys play. He stood out on the court and averaged 17 points a game, and they shipped him out of town because he was killing the organization. That's about as far as guys go, right? Like in the NBA, in terms of moving their way out, they've become much more subtle about it. But in this case, if I'm Masai Ujiri, I say, and you're right, he's very good at challenging guys and putting their careers in context.
I mean, I believe Kyle Lowry has told the story, or Masai told it. It's in a Woj column somewhere. About Masai coming up to him 3 or 4 years ago in a meeting and saying, hey, look, you can either start being a better teammate, or you can get your next contract's going to be the minimum. Here's your reality. And I don't know if that was like a pivotal moment in Kyle Lowry's career, but it's been cited as one by him. Mm-hmm. So, that's an example.
Well, and he's done that with DeMar, too, where he's really challenged him. He's done that with Dwayne Casey, where he challenged him. But what happened in the playoffs is it broke any illusion that this core could ever be great, and that's why you've seen Dwayne go and we've seen DeMar go. But if you're Masai Ujiri, here's what you say to Kawhi Leonard. You want to be – like, none of us really know what Kawhi Leonard wants, right? Like, he hasn't said it out loud in his own mouth, whether he wants a warm-weather city or merely a big market city to be the number one or be number two to LeBron. There's not many guys he can be number two to. He hasn't quite said it. But what do you want? Toronto is a absolutely 100% great city. Yeah, it's a cold weather city in the winter. Most cities are, but it's a great place to play. The fan base is amazing. This team could be really good with a bunch of switchable wings, depth at point guard. They got some issues in terms of traditional bigs. And again, we should get into Nick Nurse in a minute because
if there's a place to have issues on your roster, for the most part, that's where you want to have your issues, traditional
business. 100%, yeah. Like, they can really be – this could be a really interesting team. And if they get – if they can present a good cultural fit, a good civic fit, and this team goes to the NBA Finals, and they can pay them an extra $50 million guaranteed over any other team, for the Raptors, like, how much better are you going to do in terms of the argument, right? Like, in terms of trying to recruit a guy to stay, you really can't do much better than that. And for Kawhi Leonard – how much better are you going to do? How much better are you going to do in terms of a situation? Again, we don't know what he wants. Like, maybe he wants to play with another star of a higher caliber than Kyle Lowry. I was told last night that Kawhi had called around to some guys in the league and discussed planning out whether they could team up in a year from now, right? Like, and it wasn't just L.A. he was talking about. This is all still stuff that is on the table for him, but Toronto's a great situation. This team could win 60 games, could have a drag-out, knockdown fight with Boston or Philadelphia in the playoffs, and could absolutely win. And maybe Masai Ujiri has another deal in him. Who knows? But if you're Kawhi Leonard, I don't know. It just depends what you want from your life. Now, for the Raptors, all they can do is make the best argument they can.
There's so much noise about that. And look, I haven't talked to Kawhi. I haven't even talked to Uncle Dennis. We have people who have talked to Uncle Dennis. I'm not one of them. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to Mitch Frankel. He hasn't returned my calls or texts. That's cool. It says that he doesn't have to. He's under no obligation to. I don't care. I'm just saying I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't know that really that many people, if anybody, does. To that point, there's been noise that he wants to play for the Lakers. There's been noise from Shams that he actually would rather play for the Clippers and doesn't want to play with LeBron. I think there's a kernel, how can I say this, having talked to people who have been around him, I don't know that he doesn't want to play with LeBron. I don't know that playing with LeBron is like a golden carrot, which is not a thing, a golden ring that he's aspiring to. I don't know if it's anything. Yeah. I don't know if it's just as a situation that he could take or leave. It's not a plus. It's not a minus. There was reporting, I think Chris Haynes reported that Philly would be the only Eastern Conference city he'd like to accept a deal to or something a couple weeks ago. Okay. So why Philly? What's in Philly? Two stars, obviously. My point is, Until I hear something from him privately, I don't know what he wants. And if I don't know what he wants, that emboldens me to try. That emboldens me to try to become the thing that he wants. And the other thing is, like, there's this noise that he won't report and this and that. Look, if he's not healthy, that's one thing. And I don't believe he was malingering last year. I believe he was in pain. I believe he had an injury. I believe he was concerned about his body and how it might affect his future earning power. And that's legitimate. That's fair. Who am I to say, oh, your leg hurts? You think it's serious? Oh, stop being a baby. I'm not going to say that. He was injured and I believe it. But if you're healthy, like, what are you trying to do? You're an NBA player. You get to be an NBA player for 15 years. Go play. You're going to waste another year? Just go play. It's a good situation. Go play.
Yeah, and you're right in that I wonder how much Kawhi knows about Toronto. He's a Western Conference guy. He's a West Coast guy. What does he know about this city? He's come in the middle of winter for one night a year for several years, and that's it.
And All-Star. Doing you any favors, the weather at that All-Star.
The coldest weekend in literally 40 years in Toronto at that time of year.
You can't script that any better. Everybody in Canada was so worried about the weather, and what they were really worried about was, like, what if there's a blizzard on Wednesday and nobody can get in? It turns out that actually it was just like minus 30 with wind chill for 3 days in a row.
It was disastrous. And the next weekend, by the way, I was wearing shirt sleeves out in the yard because it was wicked
warmer.
You all are
nuts in Canada. You'll break off the barbecue when it's 30 degrees and you gotta have a winter hat. You just don't. Your standards for what is appropriate outerwear are different than normal people.
Well, and take a look in the NBA now. Everyone's citing the Paul George situation, right? As an analogous situation where Paul George wanted to be a Laker, goes to Oklahoma City, plays with Russell Westbrook, and decides to stay. I'm not sure that Paul George didn't decide that he wanted to be more of a secondary guy than a primary guy. I'm not sure that Kawhi shares that thought. But in this league, if someone's willing to stay in Oklahoma City or go to Cleveland, or like, guys in the right situation, guys should be able to play anywhere. But again, it comes down to one individual player. It comes down to what does this player want, what will he accept? The first step for the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard is to even have the conversation, right? They got to have a physical. They've got to get him in the room and say, look, give us a chance. And he's got to say yes. Because if he comes in here and he's not fully engaged, and he's not the guy who we remember from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, then this trade could become a disaster fairly quickly. Again, I think the upside of the trade far outweighs the downside of the trade, but the downside of the trade is there. But this is, for the Raptors, who else could they go get of this caliber in the league? You can't go get LeBron. You can't go get Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or James Harden. Maybe one day Giannis Antetokounmpo tires of the charms of small town Milwaukee, but that's like, and maybe Anthony Davis decides he wants to be Canadian suddenly, but those are hopes and dreams way down the road.
By the way,
this is a guy who is good enough to change your franchise if he wants to.
I'd like to be Canadian. Being Canadian doesn't seem like a bad thing to be. To one of your earlier points I thought was very good is, like, this pick, you said this pick, top 20 protected, is tailor-made for a trade like this. And one of the many reasons I agree with that is, you know, as all of your transactions sort of flow along a continuum, right? So, like, they have Jakob Poeltl because of the Bargnani deal. That was an extra pick that they got when they were good. They have OG Anunoby and Norman Powell courtesy of the Gravis Vasquez heist, where they got yep. both of those picks. It's like when you make deals like that, you give yourself latitude in the future if you need to, okay, we need to get under the tax. Let's throw this, what ends up being the 29th pick on top of Damari Carroll. We're under the tax. We need a pick, any pick, to beat the non-competitive offers for Kawhi Leonard. Here's a pick. Like, you give yourself the luxury to do that. So good decision making sort of, cascades into better opportunities for yourself. That was a great point. So here's the question. And I don't know the answer to this, and you don't, but let's have fun anyway. If Masai and the Raptors think that this is a possibility in May, do they fire Dwayne Casey?
That's a really good question. Again, the impact of that sweep to Cleveland was so massive that I think maybe they still do. But the issue you have is, like, Nick Nurse has never been an NBA head coach. And inside the organization, they'll admit, they love what he's done so far. They love his energy and his intellect and his basketball acumen and all this stuff. But they don't know what he's going to be as a head coach, because a lot of being a head coach in this league is being able to command people's respect and to be an authority figure without demanding it, right? And no one knows if he can do that. Nobody knows. Dwayne Casey could have built probably a pretty interesting defense with Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby, and I was like switching wings to Delon Wright as a long guy, Fred VanVleet, a guy who switches better than people think. You could have built a really interesting defense with that, but I think maybe he fires him anyway, because the accumulation of the little things and the perceived flaws between the two men had gotten to a point that loss to LeBron just hammered all the fractures until they broke. And so they might have done it anyway. I think if he had a realistic expectation this might happen, it might have given him pause, because then you could still have broken up the core, which you no longer believe in, of DeRozan, Lowry, Casey, and you go forward. But take a look at that playoff series, the loss to Cleveland. Lowry was their best player. Lowry was really good. DeRozan didn't quite live up to what you'd kind of hope, and neither did Casey. And those are the two guys who were gone. And so I think maybe it would have happened anyway.
Yeah, Lowry has been better in the last two playoffs. I feel like he's mostly over the playoff demons. DeMar is just has underperformed. You know, in the last two games of that series, games 3 and 4 in Cleveland, he no-showed for the most part. He was on the bench in game 3, yep. which was effectively the last game that mattered of his Raptors tenure.
Yep.
I only ask about Dwayne because Dwayne has credibility and gravitas that Nick Nurse just isn't going to have to a guy like Kawhi Leonard. And I think Nick's a really good coach. I'm excited to see what he does. He was the main engine, I think, in reinventing their offense last season, which, by the way, sustained pretty well into the playoffs, including in the Cleveland series. Their defense fell off a cliff. And that's, you know, that's why this is going to be on other. I mean, if Nick and Kawhi get off on the right foot and establish a relationship, that's obviously helpful. But I don't think you can look at the – it's rare when you get a situation like this, when it's a rental, and you can – and look at the head coach and think he's not going to be one of the three or four most prominent people in making – now, I guess he is by virtue of being the coach, but you know what I mean. Like, we can't bank on him being the guy who's going to be the sales pitch guy.
Yeah, well, and Dwayne Casey could have come into the room and said, look, I was a coach of the year last year, right? Like, and they didn't know that was going to happen, but they knew it was a possibility. And so the one thing with Dwayne is he is not a confrontational person. He's someone who gets along. He's someone who people really like and come to respect. Even the battles with Kyle Lowry over the year, Kyle really came to respect the man that Dwayne Casey is.
Absolutely.
So maybe that would have helped, because you would have had at least a known quantity, a guy who again, as a person, you know, everybody knows, Dwayne is just a wonderful person. And so maybe that would have helped. But I think the Raptors believed they would have more success with Nick Nurse as the coach than Dwayne Casey, or at least they believed that with someone else. And I think Nick wasn't necessarily the 100% choice that they were going to go with until it happened. But, I mean, they got to get Kawhi in, they got to get him playing, and then they got to win. Then they got to be really good. That's your only real chance, right? Your only real chance to keep this guy beyond the culture of the organization and the city and all those things is those other things could be good. And if they win 45 games and it's a bit of a mess, then you're dead. You have to hit on everything. You have to hit on a city that he likes, an organization he's comfortable with, a coach that he likes, teammates that he doesn't hate. And also, you have to be a team that is hard to walk away from. And as much as San Antonio is San Antonio, that team was a notch or two below the Titans of the West. There wasn't a path to a title that I could see, at least, for San Antonio. Boy, there is a path to the finals for this team.
Wouldn't you love to rewind history? And I do think it would still end in not the same way, but maybe a similar way in terms of series margin. But rewind history and have Zaza Pachulia not step on Kawhi Leonard's foot.
In game one.
When the Spurs were up by 1,000 points.
It's such a hinge moment, right? Like, it's such a moment where all of a sudden you go, like, they came into that series and it looked like everything that San Antonio had built. It's exactly the opposite of the Raptors versus Cleveland in game one. Everything they'd built up to that moment, they were ready for the moment. And then one ankle and it's all over. The whole history of the Spurs might switch on that one play, right?
No, I still think the Warriors' sheer firepower and the difficulties that the Spurs' bigger lineups were going to have with it wears them down, and it's 4-1 or something like that. But the Spurs believed that they could win that series. And there just aren't a lot of teams that go into a seven-game series with the Warriors and even meet that baseline requirement of believing that you can beat them four times. It really just may be whoever has LeBron, because you have LeBron, the Rockets of last year, and those Spurs. I will let's conclude on this. I one of the many reasons I think this summer is fascinating for the Raptors, and you can speak to this much better than I can, is that Masai Ujiri, since he got there, has sort of been labeled a conservative decision maker. And I understand that he mostly just sort of brought back the Brian Colangelo regime players. Even this trade is so low risk in terms of long-term risk that it's not that hard of a decision to make. But he has now removed the winningest coach in franchise history and an immensely popular person and the most popular player since peak Vince Carter and one of the most important pillars in franchise history. And he's taken some bullets. I mean, you've seen there are unhappy Raptors fans today. There were aghast Raptors fans when they fired Dwayne, and I bet there are even more of them today. He knows these are going to be split decisions, so to speak, among the fan. Or maybe he doesn't care. I haven't checked Twitter in a couple of hours. Maybe people are warming up to this, but there was certainly an initial wave of, this is outrageous. We've done DeMar wrong. He didn't even take a meeting in free agency. He took a discount. He's Toronto through and through. I mean, it's just interesting that, you know, these are in some ways bold and bold decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Masai Ujiri is a guy who knows he has a huge amount of political capital and can afford to spend some of it. And that's what he's done. He traded the most beloved star player in franchise history and the beloved coach of the year he fired. But he believes he can survive that because he has enormous credibility with ownership, like rock solid credibility with ownership. So he can get away with that. But I've always described Masai Ujiri in terms of his approach to transactions. If you go back in his history, you can find huge 3- and 4-team deals, and he's done that. Like, but in Toronto, he's been like a seagull. Like, you know, when seagulls are kind of flying above the beach, waiting to see if food pops up, and then they dive.
Man, I've seen seagulls take up like entire big slices of pizza. They are not messing around.
Well, and he never makes the deal until he has to. He never does something drastic until he has to. All the deals he's made have been small to kind of medium. Re-signing Serge Ibaka was a big, weird one, and re-signing Kyle Lowry was a big one. But both were 3-year terms, not huge commitment, stuff you could get out from under if you had to. He's waited for this moment, and everything he's built about the Raptors, about himself as an executive, someone who is a power player in the league, about the culture of Toronto as a city and a basketball organization, everything he's built, he waited until the moment where he could employ all of it. And now he's rolled the dice on a top five player who you can't get at the store very often. And all he had to do it was trade away a guy that the fan base loved and fire a coach that the fan base loved. So this is his moment as a president of an organization where he's really going for it in a way he never has before in Toronto. And the stakes were never higher than they were last year. All he did was raise them this year. So it's either a bigger reward or a bigger disappointment.
Yeah, and the healthy version of Kawhi is absolutely worth it. He's a top five player. I voted for him for MVP two seasons ago. You just don't get players like that. And if you're going to put your franchise back on the map, you got to get a player like that eventually. And as you said, this core had sort of run its course, ran into the LeBron monster again, and a LeBron monster that didn't look all that terrifying as a team against anyone else in the playoffs other than the Raptors. I think it's absolutely worth it. I don't think it's a great deal for the Spurs, but it's going to be a mighty interesting next few weeks in Toronto as they just try and sit down with the guy. You can't go cottaging, you know, or you can tell Kawhi about cottaging so he can, you know, get up to speed on it.
I got to tell you, Zach, I am going back cottaging. I'm going to do this. But even the first press conference with just Masai Ujiri in a room is going to be fascinating because they start from nothing. They start from a guy who doesn't want to be here and who may threaten not to report, and that's where you start. And this ride could be amazing for the Toronto Raptors from the very beginning, and nobody, absolutely nobody knows how it's going to go.
If he doesn't report,
if he
doesn't report, like right now we're sitting pretty. We got, I mean, essentially everything but Marcus Smart and Clint Capella is done. and we're like, we are sitting pretty with, like, I don't even have to really check Twitter for like a prolonged period of time. And now maybe, but it's fine. I mean, it would be, holy cow, would it be fun? I just won't be here for it, but that would be some drama. And, look, man, this just for at least another year, my frequent trips to Toronto will be watching a good team and thus be fruitful. So I look forward to it.
It'll be great to see you here again, my friend. And whatever you find here, boy, it'll be interesting.
Thank you, Bruce. Everyone read Bruce at the Toronto Star. He's the best. And whether it's hockey or what, you covered the Olympics, you could do everything. So thank you for spending some time, and go back and see your family at the cottage.
My pleasure, man. All I got to do now is write a column.
Oh, that's right. That part too. All right. Thanks, bud. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.